This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
Are you looking to buy a house or perhaps thinking about selling your home? Look no further and let our chica, Sonia Figueroa, help you out.
With now over 12 years of experience in real estate, Sonia has helped over 200 sellers and buyers combined in the last couple of years. So if you're a first-time home buyer or perhaps a first-time seller, Sonia is your go-to chica.
Definitely. And I'm sure some of you maybe have already started your own research online, reading things that probably actually don't make any sense to you because it's your first time buying. Or maybe you have spoken to other people but haven't found someone that actually knows what they're doing.
Well, you know what? If this sounds like you, reach out to Sonia Figueroa at www.csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com or any social media outlet. And mi gente, don't forget, she also speaks Spanish. Habla español. You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. We're back at it again with another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your boy Christian, and we have the Mama Juana flowing in the studio. So
this be pig, I think I'm still here.
Sorry.
Hi guys, Nati.
So we, like I mentioned, right now we have the Mama Juana flowing in the studio. It's now it's late enough where we could actually have a drink and not orange juice.
It's like I was drinking. 3 o'clock earlier. Somewhere.
It's five o'clock somewhere. So, you know, we've had some great discussions today. Like I know sometimes we mention in the other podcasts where we usually record a couple shows together. So by the time the second recording comes in, my voice is a little hoarse and all that. But the guest that we're bringing in today actually brought some Mama Juana, so it's helping me out.
It's some medicina.
Exactly. He said it's medicina. He's actually joined us before in the past with his group called Bomba Kumbuya, but the man has another thing that he's doing. And actually, every time he posts something on social media, I'm like, man, where the hell does this man live, man? Because I want to go get some of that food. So he has a company called Urban Pilon, and we have Roberto here with us. How are you, bro?
Yeah, man, I'm happy. I'm happy to be here. Just happy to be back at La Verdad.
Back, man.
Thank you so much for coming back. Let's lift up his microphone just a little bit more here.
We're
recording with no edits, man, so I'm just going to go ahead and say
cool, no problem.
Like I was mentioning, you know, I see your social media stuff, and some of the dishes on there, bro, are just like extraordinary. So before we jump into, you know, your culinary experience, can you explain what Urban Pilon is to those that
Urban Pilon came actually from a frustration, to be honest with you, because I was it kind of burned something inside of me. I remember I was on the search for mofongo in the city.
Wow.
Oh man, and so there are a few places at that time that, like Coco's was open at the time. Mm-hmm. They had some good dishes. Mm-hmm. For some people it was a little bit too pricey, but there were some places in Chicago that do really like how would you say, really like stable food, really good food, solid. Mm-hmm. But I had a disappointment in my search for mofongo. And I was like, man, it's too dry.
I think a lot of us have been in those same shoes.
You know, it's big. How am I going to swallow this softball? Mm. You know, like, what's up, you know? So I'm like, guess what? You know, I'm going to just do it myself, you know?
And at that time, you already had culinary experience? No. Or was it just one of those things where it's like, I need to...
No. It's like, it just came from frustration. Actually, I was taking a business class, and then my boy Angel Fuentes, also who is also a part of Buya, he also, you know, dabbles in cooking, and his wife's an extraordinary baker, and so we thought about maybe doing a restaurant at the time.
Ah, okay.
You know, we're talking about five, six years ago, yeah. Right? So then... man, things get expensive. Things are expensive in Chicago.
Especially here, man. I've looked at the restaurant business, too. Right. You have to have a license for this, a license for that, even a license, right, like, to, like, just to serve alcohol, all that
for stuff. For a canopy, for sidewalk, yep. for all the taxes that you're going to pay. If you want alcohol license, you know, all these things, you know. And so it's expensive. And so I you know, my son's in private school. I'm like, I can't do that. I just can't. And so I started... you know, just doing other things. I kind of like crawling and slowly but surely, you know, evolving.
Yeah.
And learning and just learning and reading. And every day mm-hmm. I'm constantly like doing stuff and just trying to do the stuff that is outside of the standard. Like really like digging deep into the historical yeah. part of which is Puerto Rican cuisine.
One of the things that I noticed, too, when I was talking to... our other member of La Verdad, which is in Michigan, I was like, yo, like, we have to interview Urban Pilon because it's not just cooking, right? And one of the things that I know, nope. I want to talk a little bit more about it. You give a nice history. Every picture you put down, you give a nice history of where that dish came from, nice. The fusion behind it. Right. And to me, it was like, wow, like, I didn't know. You eat this because you've been eating it since God knows right. how long. But sometimes I sit there, I'm like, man, where did Mofongo get its name from? Or how did this person come in and say, I'm going to mash a bunch of plátano together and right. serve it and put some garlic
Maybe
or whatever?
Maybe he was frustrated with something. Never know.
So, why did that concept come up? I know you were looking for Mofongo, but has history and cultural, the cultural aspect of things have always been prevalent in your life?
So, like, remember, so I'm a part of Buya, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly, like, feel like I have to restore and rescue stuff, you know? And so that's kind of like how I am with food. Like in Chicago, there's the big craze about the jibarito sandwich, and it's good. It's great, you know? And it's something that evolved. I did a blog about it years ago. But at the same time, you know, there's so much more food outside of this sandwich, you know, mm-hmm. and there's a lot to be proud of. But we just have to find it and tap into it.
And some of those foods, too, like I've seen on your page, have been something I've never even heard of before, or a lot of mariscos that I haven't heard of before. I don't eat fish, so I kind of like, unfortunately, haven't been able to be on that. You know, having, como se dice, having... got in that good taste of it because I'm allergic to it. So there's a big aspect of Puerto Rico that has to do with marisco. Right. I've never been able to enjoy it. But even with regular dishes that I never knew of, so I will go in, for example, I grew up just eating your basic frituras, you know, like capurria, the pionono, whatever, and then your mofongo. But when I went to Puerto Rico, they were serving the mofongo relleno and all these different. I'm like, wow, like...
I love that about Puerto Rico right now. You know, we were just talking about the economic crisis. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is that it's forcing people to be creative, you know. And so they're not necessarily opening up fancy restaurants in Viejo San Juan. Yeah. They're not doing that. They're doing food trucks. They're doing little kiosco.
And
dope food trucks, man. Some stuff is like,
evolving. Christian has his dream, if he hasn't told you. Christian, he has a lot of dreams, first of all. But a food truck is definitely one of them. Yeah, man.
And I see it like when I was first looking into the restaurant business, and food truck obviously ran through my mind. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I could do this. And I was looking at Puerto Rico. Like, my cousin owns a food truck in Puerto Rico, and this man be doing some crazy dishes. And I'm like, how do you do that in a freaking food truck? And in my mind, it's like, there's so much in this small little island that you could do. There's so many dishes that you could do and make your own variations of it. Because in my mind, for the longest time, I just thought it was just frituras and mofongo, that's it.
You know what you see a lot of is that a lot of these chefs, a lot of these cocineros, they're going back to their roots. And there's a lot of this stuff that... after like the 80s and 90s, that push of like McDonald's and what they call the McDonaldization of Puerto Rico, right?
Or the fast food.
With the fast food and Church's Chicken and McDonald's and all that stuff. You know, now people are starting to move back. Now people are starting to look at their historical food to the ancestors, you know, to get the answers. And I love that, you know, because that's kind of like what I try to do with my food.
And that's interesting, too, because, you know, we do come into the whole fast food atmosphere. And that's probably why you couldn't find a good mofongo in Chicago for the longest, because and I have this conversation with my dad all the time, is, and nothing against Mexican food, because I love me some tacos, but it's easy and quick to make, yeah, right? You can make tacos, and you don't have to waste a lot of food. Whereas Puerto Rican food, from my experience, it's like, you better make a big old caldero, and then how often are you going to make that caldero in order for it to be quote-unquote fresh, right? So we'll go into that more, but I want to go back to you looking for a mofongo, right, in the city of Chicago. You're eventually, you know, you can't find something that you think it's
right.
a mofongo, right?
Right, right.
So you start talking about building the restaurant. Tell me the steps. Like, how did you get into cooking and all
Man,
that?
Man, so
did you mess up a couple of dishes? Like,
all the time. So I work in healthcare. So I was always conscious of, like, working with seniors, and, you know, and promoting food, that because diet and because food is such a big vital part
of
our
health.
Life yeah. and our health, right? So I was constantly just learning about food, but I didn't want to go to Hispanic housing in front of a bunch of old Puerto Rican ladies and Cuban ladies and Dominican ladies and talk about cauliflower or something that they weren't gonna eat and something that they couldn't relate to,
right? Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, when you think about Puerto Rican food, at least for me, like 10 years ago, I kind of did think that maybe Puerto Rican food was unhealthy, right, Cristian? Yeah. That maybe it is, like pork and frituras and stuff. But when you think about like Taino diet, right, you think about, man, you think about like vegetables, you think about leafy stuff, you think about mariscos, because they had to eat from el tenían que comer del mal, right? Yeah. They had the fish,
la verdura,
and so this stuff is not, you know, when you think about the roots of the food, it's really not unhealthy. Yeah. And then something happened later when, you know, mass production of food, the 60s came, and then people started really capitalizing on on instant food, you know, where you could put your sazon in a paquete and you get food coloring, you have flavor, but it's filled with a lot of garbage, man. It's filled with a lot of garbage.
Which unfortunately nowadays is something that we deal with, right? And I think right now we're kind of breaking it down a little bit, you know, little by little. But we, you know, for example, myself, like, I want it quick. I want something I could, you know, go in and open up the Goya sazon or adobo and just throw it in. And in reality, there's a lot of added things on there because it's supposed to last for a very long time.
Including food coloring, man, which is bad for you, you know? And so filled with a bunch of sodium, artificial, you know, flavorings.
Yeah.
You know, and so we got to be conscious of that stuff. And so if you go back to the roots, then you know that something like achote was something that was natural. It comes from the earth, and that's what people use. And that's what people use for their food coloring. Right now, a Chicago company, La Criolla, they do actually the achote ground up with cumin and salt, and it doesn't have any added stuff. It's actually pretty natural.
So achote, for those who don't know, it's what gives that red color to the Puerto Rican rice, right?
You might have
but it's made out of the annatto seeds, right?
And then they
grind it up or whatnot. I've done that, the little oil with that before, because I wanted to get something that tasted more pure, right? Yeah. Instead of using sazon, which gives it the same color. So if you ever look at Puerto Rican dishes or red rice, they might call it, or arroz amarillo or arroz con andule, it's because it has that annatto achiote in there as well.
Yeah, so what's pretty cool about like food coloring when you think about like Puerto Rican, like African roots, there's like palm oil that does the same thing. It reddens food. When you think about our Arab roots, saffron was something that was used to give color to the food.
They use it a lot in Spain.
Achote, in Brazil, denden oil, which is similar to palm oil. So you see these links that you have with people. When you start learning about the history of your food, you start learning about all the ties that you have and parallels and similarities that you have.
So any particular reason, though, why we've been so obsessed with coloring our food or giving that red color to it? Has it been more of psychologically it gives you a better taste, or?
No, I just think it's a tendency that has probably been going on for years and years and years and years and years, that came from the Taínos, that they used to use it. They called it the lipstick tree, where they used to paint themselves, you know? So it has a long, long, long history. So,
and that's the stuff that I love to see, because I want to be able to look at food, and that food's going to you know, honestly, it probably tells me who I am. Mm-hmm. It tells me, because we eat it all the time, right?
So tell us about some of those, right? Yeah. Christian, you said that you've seen all these posts. I haven't seen them, but he's a
he's
a cook.
Get two new follows after this,
right? I can't say that in front of this guy, man. I'm not a cook, man. Well, I dabble here and there. I do it to survive. You know what I'm saying?
But like, he cooks in that house. But so I haven't seen. So what are these dishes, and like, what are the stories that you put behind them?
So, like, for example, I'll just give an example of a food that has a really nasty stigma. For example, mm-hmm. there was something that we used to do called funche. Mm-hmm. Funche is a Bantu word, okay. And it's kind of like cornbread or something that was made actually out of cornmeal. Uh-huh. It's sat, and then you could cut it like bread. And so the word, like I said, the word is Bantu. We know that is actually something that everywhere in the African diaspora, you see foods very similar to mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. And so there were really negative connotations to funche, mm-hmm. Like nasty sayings like cara de funche, to say mm-hmm. that, you know, the things that are negative. It was associated with blackness. Which, like, okay. the music that right. I do, it is given a negative connotation as if right. it's bad because right. it's black.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I decided that that was something that when I had the chance, I was going to do funche. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to call it Puerto Rican polenta because, you know, that's kind of like, you know, trying to make it European. And right. what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You're making it European, therefore it's nice, therefore it's acceptable.
Right.
It's
right.
not cool,
and
you know?
I had funche before, and I remember, I think my grandma or somebody was like, "Mira, I'm going to give you funche. And people are going to tell you that this poor people food or whatnot." Right. And she will always cook these dishes that she will give me a little history lesson and be like, "Oh, you know, a lot of people are going to say that this is poor people food, pero esto es lo que nosotros comemos, and this is us, mm-hmm, et cetera." Mm-hmm. So I knew when you made it, I was like, whoa, like, I didn't know you could make it this, you know, elegant. You know, to me, it was just a regular food that I would eat. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, tell me more about another dish or perhaps, like, for example, mofongo. Like, what are the roots of mofongo?
So mofongo is, from what I understand, it's an Angolan word. Okay. And means a lot of. So we're thinking that it was possibly fed a lot of people. So entonces el plátano or the plantain in Puerto Rico was known as el pan de los negros. Mm. El pan de los negros.
Wow.
So it was something that was very, very black. Later in years, when in the British Islands, mm-hmm. the colonizers wanted to save money because they had found something that was cheaper than plátano. And what was it? It was breadfruit. It was pana. Mm-hmm. Or like in Ponce, they call it mapeng, which is a Creole word.
If you haven't had pana before, man, I love pana. It tastes so good.
Pero si tú vas a Cuba, ellos dicen que eso es la comida de los puercos, de los que le dan a los cerdos. So it, what I'm saying is that it was a food that they were trying to trump mm-hmm. the flavors and the history behind plátano because they wanted to feed people cheaper. In some places it took, and then in other places it didn't. It took years and years and years, and finally it broke because a banana tree is big. With one banana, you could probably feed a family. Yeah. You know, it was a cheaper way for them to feed people. Mostly slaves.
And that was one of the other dishes that my grandmother had made. She's like, people are going to tell you this is comida de los pobres, but it's, you know, and it tasted great. I mean,
it's beautiful. It's beautiful food, you know.
And I know that a lot of influences, for example, I know you were mentioning earlier the whole idea of, you know, cooking from the roots, so like the vianda and all these different, you know, with the mariscos as well. But then we start introducing pork into the Puerto Rican cuisine, and nowadays I feel like everything has pork in it. So can you give us a little background on that?
Man, pork. I have a love-hate relationship with pork. So
yeah, right.
So pork is the stamp of the colonizer of Spain. Mm-hmm. Why? Because pork was always used. Remember, southern Spain was conquered by the Moors, right? Mm-hmm. Who were Arab people, mm-hmm. and they don't eat pork.
No. Mm-hmm.
So that was a way to say, yo, I'm Catholic. I don't roll with the Arabs, you know. And so when they came to the New World to colonize people, there were things that were done, like to say, I'm Spanish or I'm, you know, I'm Catholic, and they would tie a pig around your front yard, mm-hmm. el patio, and that was a symbol of Catholicism. And so, right, that's still something that you eat around Christmas, you know, a sacred holiday, you know. And so pork is very much a that food that of the Spanish. Now I have friends that don't necessarily eat pork. I've made it I made a conscious choice to try to make delicious food without pork. And so I do. That's what I try to do. I don't think that, you know, I think that everything evolves. And so we're not working the days that we used to as Puerto Ricans. We're not working on the finca. We're not cortando caña. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, some many of us are sitting in the office all day. We can't eat the way we used to eat. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's different. So we can't. Yeah. So if I eliminate the pork, I'm okay with it.
And then it's very interesting.
Personal
too.
Choice, right?
It's one of those things where I've talked to a lot of people, especially especially people that are into history or people that are into you know, like culinary, that will tell you that they're like, oh yeah, I made a conscious decision not to eat a lot of pork. And it's funny too because we had Caesar from Money Mantra who cut off meat entirely because they start reading, you start getting this like, oh, no wonder I'm all sleepy all the time. Yeah. But it's very interesting nowadays though, because I feel like every party that we have has to have some penne, some lechon, you know, they have to have some type of pork on it, you know.
Arroz con andule, that is a very Christmassy meal. We eat it year round. Porque from my great aunt, from what I understand and what I've been taught and what I've learned, is that arroz con gandules, a food, again, that gandul that came from West Africa, was something that was cultivated in the later part of the year around Christmas. Therefore, that's why it was eaten around Christmas. It wasn't something but now we have canned foods and you can eat it every day. But I like to just let you know, that plate looks like Christmas to me.
So what was like a typical meal? Let's take it back in history, and you've done research on this. What was like a typical meal that Taino would eat, for example?
Yeah. So it wouldn't be bacalao. Bacalao is a salt fish that's salted and usually from the cold water.
Okay.
So bacalao's not, even though it's like one of the more popular things in all the Caribbean, it's not even from the Caribbean. Okay. You know, it's like Alaskan and stuff like that. But it would probably be fresh fish. There's also something interesting is that, you know, we don't have a lot of leafy vegetables in our diet. You know, las ensaladas para nosotros, the salads for us, sometimes, many times don't have like lettuce and kale and stuff and such, right?
Exactly.
It has, you know, una ensalada de papa, tiene papa, ensalada de camarones, ensalada de pulpo, eso es lo que tiene, right? But, you know, in some of these history books, you see that people would eat things such as la hoja de yuca. Yuca was one of the most cultivated thing for the Taínos, was yuca. Corn didn't do so well in the Caribbean because of the hurricanes, and it would knock it over.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's why corn took well in the Americas, like Mexico and Central America. But in Puerto Rico and in El Caribe, corn, although it was cultivated, it didn't take so well. But yuca, because it was underground, it did well. Y lo que se comía era la hoja. Just like la hoja de malanga, antes se comía también.
And then
are leaves.
Exactly. And then you have your Taínos who are doing a lot of fish. You know, main course will be a fish somehow, something from the sea. Then you have your African, you know, the slaves that were coming in and you know, stationed in Puerto Rico, Cuba. What was a typical meal for them?
That is a great question.
I guess it will depend where too, right? On the island, what part of the island they were in?
That is a great question. I have the understanding that that blacks everywhere in the Americas probably were the heads of the kitchen, including Puerto Rico. And that means that they were the cocineros, and they were, you know, probably the ones that, you know, that did the, all the cooking, right? So typical food. Let me see. I'm thinking about batata. I'm thinking about ñame. I'm thinking about plátano. I'm thinking about gandules. These are all foods that are native to Africa. But, you know, I'm sure they dabbled in everything because I believe that they cooked everything.
Yeah. and, you know, for those who are listening to the podcast, I wanted to point out there's a couple of things that Roberto here brought to us.
Yeah, we'll post the pictures. I took some.
But this kind of goes together with the book that you were just showing me earlier. It's a very old school book. If you just show me a little glimpse of it from over here, I can kind of see it.
El Cocinero.
It looks like something my grandma probably had back in the day.
Like in the
corner
of the bookshelf, you know?
Yeah, I remember my grandma had a book, and I don't know exactly. I wish, Abuelita, you know, in heaven, if you're listening to me, show me where that book is at. Because she always have un libro ahí medio escondido with a $100 bill inside, you know, that she didn't tell anybody. But I think it was called El Cocinero. I don't know.
Dude, I feel like my grandma did that too, like a $100 bill.
So he brought in a book. We're going to post it on social media so you can take a look at it. We have a bottle of Brugal, but it's actually just a bottle of Brugal. But inside there's Mamajuana. And then we have a pilon here as well, because obviously urban pilon. But can you talk a little bit more about that book that you have right over there? It looks like a Bible, right?
It's just one of the, I think, special books. In it, you're going to see, like, the first, what's interesting, you're going to see, like, the first recipes for some stuff, you know? You're going to see a lot of things that you may have thought that in Puerto Rico weren't done, that you associated with other places. Like, you see atole in here. You see horchata in here. You see the first recipe for mofongo in here. And guess what? It was boiled more like mangu. Man. What? Does that make people upset?
Don't tell me.
You like the secret.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I guess.
That's very interesting. So
a lot of interesting things. And we eat. And in that time, Cristian, we used to eat everything. Nothing went to waste, man. You're going to see que se comía la hoja de malanga, which I've had when I went to Trinidad, and then I'm like,
so you,
man,
actually eat that?
Yeah, wow. You eat the hojas, the leaves, the malangas, wow. But you just can't. They can't be too big and too old because then they're hard. Mm-hmm. You got to get tiernas and like small and like delicate.
Yeah,
and that way you could eat it. And that's part of a leafy diet that you can have with nutrients.
That's very interesting too, because I remember growing up and when grandma would make the vianda, right? And I think I'm saying that right. It's vianda. It has like the different types of roots, right? So, and some of them, I'm like, man, that thing looked like you just picked it up from the backyard, you threw it in. It probably still has a little dirt in it.
Because it came from the dirt, right?
Exactly, yeah. But as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
You're looking at McDonald's. And then Abuelita is making it. I'm like, damn it, man. Now I got to eat this freaking vianda con bacalao. Like, and then, but it, later on in life, I started appreciating it. I'm like, man, like, I don't see that anymore. Like, you know, and she will always give us a little history lesson of where it came from and why, and kind of make us feel like proud of eating that food.
I mean, that kind of goes to his nature. I'm going to dibble and dabble in you and Bomba. As you guys go a little deeper in your roots and where the music comes from, and then it looks like you're doing the same with your cooking. So is that just who you are as a person? You just like,
I think so. I think so. You know, these are the unsung heroes in our culture, right?
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about Madre Patria being Spain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you know, I like to, you know, help out so that my unsung heroes and ancestors can be heard too. Exactly. And be appreciated. And so there's so much here, you know, like what in an hour we can never cover exactly all the stuff that is so profound about like Caribbean food and Puerto Rican food, you know, and how it relates to so many things, you know, and how beautiful it is. So
what were some of that you said you did a lot of learning, a lot of, you know, you made a lot of mistakes and things like that. Like, what's like been some of the new things that you picked up on that you were like blown away, or like, I never thought of that, or never, you know, what were some of those things?
So I made a conscious decision that I was not going to go to culinary school, but I was going to talk with viejas that knew how to cook and learn from them.
Old school.
And that was done on purpose. Mm-hmm. I don't knock the other stuff, but I'm honestly not really interested in sure. French or Italian cooking, although I'm sure it's delicious, you mm-hmm. know. But I'm into learning about who I am. I'm right. into learning about us mm-hmm. because we're not going to learn that in school.
Mm-hmm.
So let me see some of the stuff that, oh man, when I think that cooking is a lot about feel, which right? Mm-hmm. So like today I feel, you know, and so when you're out of touch with that and you're kind of looking at a recipe and you don't trust your instincts, I think things can... Baking, for me, is hit or miss.
That's so true. You know, like that trusting your instinct. I could never follow a recipe book.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I think this might need a little bit more salt, or it may need a little bit more... I need to cut up this. And that feeling that you get while you're cooking that will give you that end result. That's why when everybody tells me, oh, can you give me the recipe for your arroz con andule? I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
It depends how I feel that day.
So I had a baby shower within the year for Lauren Brooks from, shout out to Lauren Brooks from Booyah. And I was asked to do mac and cheese. And so I didn't go with my instinct. What I did was I was working at a soul food restaurant at the time. And I'm like, I'm just going to do the soul food restaurant recipe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I put too much salt, man. I put too much salt. It was too salty, and I was so embarrassed because I made a big tray, stupid tray for like 60 people, you know? And, I was like, no. And the next day, I had to do it again. I'm like, look, no. I got to, you know, that's how
he
I am.
Back,
you know?
Like,
man, I dreamt about it. I slept about it. I'm like, yeah. I swear to God, I came back the next day with a plate of mac and cheese. I swear to God, I did.
Come back again.
Yeah, but I was so embarrassed. That's one of the more recent ones.
So
but there's many.
Once you got into the idea of showing the history behind it, what are you doing as far as like are you cooking for different locations? Are you doing catering? Like what's the specifics?
So I do a thing they call meal sharing, mm-hmm. which similar to like Cuba. If you guys have ever been to Cuba, where they open up their home, le dicen un paladar.
Really?
You know? So in places like Brazil, Cuba, and West Africa, they've already been doing this where you open up your home and you feed people.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I do it. I do that. I do that once a month through meal sharing. And for the last few months, it's been mofongo.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've switched it up because I can't do the same stuff over and over again. So I switch it up. I'll do it with ropa vieja, with bacalao guisao. I'll do it con pollo en fricasse. I'll do it just different stuff, con camarone. You know, I just do different stuff. So I'm constantly doing that. I do that. I think I'm doing.
You invite people into your home.
Yeah, I invite.
Well, meal sharing is an app, right?
Is an app.
Oh, so is that how you get the people?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So there's no money exchange or anything. You have to go on meal sharing, look for me, and then that's pretty much it. And then you pay online, and then that's it. And then you come over. I share my mama Juana and rum, and it's a BYOB thing. And it's all about like good vibes, and you know.
I actually heard of that concept
Not these like
this one this month is actually booked, but next month is still I haven't promoted next
we're gonna
month
have to
too
check
much
it out. But I've actually
coming over.
I've actually heard of that concept and I think it was in Cuba or not Cuba it was they were using meal sharing in Spain.
They do it in Spain, right? in London.
I was listening to a podcast where this Puerto Rican guy went to Spain to study theater for, and that's how he ate and that's how he made money, because he was like, they wanted me to make arroz con andule and whatever, so he opened up meal sharing and he was doing it that way. He stayed in an Airbnb, so he was talking about how he saved so much money by just using, you know, modern apps that are actually old school, like you were mentioning, old school way of doing things, where you just invite people to come over.
That's pretty
dope. Everybody chip in.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing that you're doing now? Do you give them a history lesson while you're doing the food?
If they want, but I do a Caribbean cooking class.
Okay.
I do that, and where I go through the history, and then we cook with those ingredients, and everybody gets to cook, and we eat at the end, which is
when
real fun.
Classes?
that's real fun. But I haven't set the next one. I have a blog, the website, you know, and Instagram, all that stuff. Yeah.
What do you see? What do you see Urban Pilon doing in the future?
Yeah. So the great thing about this is because it's still evolving, is that I'm open and I'm open to opportunity. And so, you know, I'm working on a pique that, you know, I've had for a long time. That
which, by the way, big shout out. He brought me some pique. I've been dreaming of pique. I'm not even going to lie, dude. Like, me and my dad, we're always talking about pique. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Boricua no comen pique, right? A lot of people will tell you, Puerto Ricans don't eat pique. And I'm like, no.
It's a misconception.
I need some pique. Like, I need, and it's not your basic regular pique. Like, sometimes when you go, or hot sauce, let me just say that way. It's not your regular hot sauce, like Valentina or something. Puerto Rican pique is a little different, more vinegar-based, would you say?
Yeah, it's vinegar-based, and it's an art. It's beautiful. It's, you know.
It looks beautiful. It's like very.
I put some piña in there.
I'm so excited. You don't understand. I'm so pissed that I have to wait 2 days, because I was about to put this in some, in a nice, like a caldo, like, oh my god, I'm getting so hungry.
Habichuela,
right?
Exactly. But what this again comes from frustration when you go to a restaurant and you can't find pique.
Yeah,
and it's like, yo man, I want some pique. So that's
exactly,
that's,
it's beautiful. Like, I'm gonna post it on social media today and give everybody a huge shout out, because
thank you, bro.
In reality, it's one of those things that I've been telling Vanessa. I'm like, man, I need to find this. And the one time that I had gotten some pique was at one of the stores here in the city, and it was really expensive, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to go buy it again. And then the second time that I got it was from a kiosco in Puerto Rico. My uncle brought it in, but it was a real small little, like, flask, you know. It was probably an old Brugal flask, and they just put it in there. And I've been wanting some pique, so big shout out to Roberto for bringing me that. I'm gonna put it on social media.
My pleasure, man.
But you know, aside from, like you mentioned, you know, you do want to do, you're really open to what might come by. Is there something, though, that, like, in the back of your mind, you're like, man, this is my dream. I want to, this is what I want to do.
There's a few things that I want to do. I want to, and I'm going to put it out there to the universe and hope that it comes into fruition, is I want to do the pique, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to honor mi papá de crianza that introduced me to pique, that I would always go to the table and bring it to him all the time. And then pique is one thing that I want to do, and that comes from a void that we don't have in Chicago so much, I feel. You know, again, it comes from frustration.
Yeah.
Another thing is, I want to honor the elderly, and I want to interview them and get their recipes and publish it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
To honor, you know, our elderly people, because many times they're forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome, man.
And, you know, I just want to keep teaching so that, you know, there's an awakening here in Chicago too, just like there is in Puerto Rico.
Exactly. And I think that's one of those things where I could appreciate what you're doing, as far as, like, the last thing that you said, where it was grabbing recipes that the elders have. I always bring up my grandmother. My grandmother was the best cook I've ever. I think everybody says that about their grandmother, but I swear to God, like, to me, it was the best thing. And there was this one dish that she made from, like, out of nowhere. It was, like, with hot dogs and these little pimientos and all these things. And I always, like, I crave it. Every Christmas, I crave it. And sometimes it brings tears to my eyes. I'm like, I wish I would have listened to her when she says, sit here so you can learn how to do it. And she never wrote it down. And the fact that you're taking the initiative, and hopefully, you know, soon to be able to publish all that, I think it's great. It's something that we've been trying to do with the podcast, just getting ideas and people that are in the city, and recording it so that it's there for a very, very long time.
Sharing it, too, with other people, all of our listeners that, you know, are looking for things like that, and we're looking just to support people doing that, you know?
So if anybody wants to find you on social media, how can they find you?
So urbanpilon.com, right? You could always find there, but I'm on social media, Urban Pilon on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. And then on Instagram, I'm Berto_Pilon.
Awesome.
Yep.
So, mi gente, make sure you find him and follow him on social media. We are getting close to the hour here, so I want to make sure that you guys get that written down or put it on your phone while you're listening to the podcast. Any events other that are coming up for MealShare?
Check it out. Check me out, Roberto Perez on MealSharing. But the next one is booked, which is Mofongo, and the next one is called Pescadores, which, if you're a seafood lover, then that's going to be honoring all the seafood.
I might have to go with some Benadryl or something to try
it out. Take a whole bottle with you.
Well, you heard it here, mi gente. Also, you know, if you follow the musical side of Roberto, he's with Bomba Combuya, who were also part of the show a couple months ago, I want to say, right? It was still
big
cold
outside.
Big
shout out to my family in Buya. Yeah.
And they're performing, you know, it's probably going to be too late right now when you guys hear this show, but they will be performing at the Fiesta, so I'll definitely put it on the social media so you guys can hear it. Mm-hmm. And anything, you know, if you have any questions, any comments, or any concerns, feel free to hit us up on laverdadltd.com or through email. Make sure you follow, subscribe to this podcast, you know, on iTunes or any of the platforms that you listen to us, where you can be found through at laverdadltd on social media. That is at laverdadltd. Once again, bro, I appreciate you coming by, bringing some Mama Juana, my BS right here.
Blessings,
so excited about. Thank you so much. And whatever, if you need anything, we're here to help out
gracias,
as well.
Gracias, brother.
Mi gente, gracias, and God bless. Peace.
Peace.